You are listening to WXRW River West Radio, 104.1 FM and riverwestradio.com globally. Look, we are running very quickly out of time to save billions of lives. If you've been paying attention to climate science at all lately, you've probably been seeing that the earlier projections by climate scientists were, to put it mildly, overly optimistic. We are facing down the barrel of a global extinction event of our own making, and we need to act immediately if we are to stop it. To that end, I am considering it a personal duty to radicalize you. You personally. We do not have the luxury of business as usual anymore, and we didn't really have that luxury for the last few decades, but I'm not here to gripe on the past. The next few episodes of this show will seek to directly radicalize you. It's no secret that the far right, white nationalists, the alt-right, you know, all their cronies, are very purposefully mobilizing. They are seeking out disenfranchised, depressed, lonely white men and recruiting them into their ranks with one goal in mind, to dismantle what few democratic institutions actually exist in this world, which are very few to begin with. I feel I need to do what I can to reach out to the people I know and love and radicalize you. I know you're all good people with amazing hearts. And I know the term radical sounds gross and weird. And that's why we'll start this process with a great little essay by an author that I really quite enjoy. David Graeber is an anthropologist and professor first at Yale and currently at the London School of Economics. His many books have won critical acclaim worldwide, with his most famous being an exhaustive history of global economy called Debt, the First 5,000 Years. I'm going to read his essay titled, Are You an Anarchist? The answer may surprise you. I know none of you consider yourselves anarchists and probably don't understand what that word even actually means. I encourage you to listen, ask yourself the questions that the essay poses, and then come to your own conclusions about our current society and your place in it. Are you an anarchist? The answer may surprise you. Chances are you've already heard something about who anarchists are and what they are supposed to believe. Chances are almost everything you have heard is nonsense. Many people seem to think that anarchists are proponents of violence, chaos, and destruction, that they are against all forms of order and organization, or that they are crazed nihilists who just want to blow everything up. In reality, nothing could be further from the truth. Anarchists are simply people who believe human beings are capable of behaving in a reasonable fashion without having to be forced to. It is really a very simple notion, but it's one that the rich and powerful have always found extremely dangerous. At their very simplest, anarchist beliefs turn on to two elementary assumptions. The first is that human beings are, under ordinary circumstances, about as reasonable and decent as they are allowed to be, and can organize themselves and their communities without needing to be told how. The second is that power corrupts. Most of all, anarchism is just a matter of having the courage to take the simple principles of common decency that we all live by and to follow them through to their logical conclusions. Odd though this may seem, in most important ways, you are probably already an anarchist. You just don't realize it. Let's start by taking a few examples from everyday life. If there's a line to get on a crowded bus, do you wait your turn and refrain from elbowing your way past others, even in the absence of police? If you answered yes, then you are used to acting like an anarchist. The most basic anarchist principle is self-organization, the assumption that human beings do not need to be threatened with prosecution in order to be able to come to reasonable understandings with each other, or to treat each other with dignity and respect. Everyone believes that they are capable of behaving reasonably themselves. If they think laws and police are necessary, it is only because they don't believe that other people are. But if you think about it, don't those people all feel exactly the same way about you? Anarchists argue that almost all the antisocial behavior which makes us think it's necessary to have armies, police, prisons, and governments to control our lives is actually caused by the systemic inequalities and injustice those armies, police, prisons, and governments make possible. It's all a vicious circle. If people are used to being treated like their opinions do not matter, they're likely to become angry and cynical, even violent, which of course makes it easy for those in power to say their opinions do not matter. Once they understand that their opinions really do matter just as much as anyone else's, they tend to become remarkably understanding. To cut a long story short, anarchists believe that for the most part, it is power itself and the effects of power that make people stupid and irresponsible. Are you a member of a club or sports team or any other voluntary organization where decisions are not imposed by one leader but made on the basis of general consent? If you answered yes, then you belong to an organization which works on anarchist principles. Another basic anarchist principle is voluntary association. This is simply a matter of applying democratic principles to ordinary life. The only difference is that anarchists believe it should be possible to have a society in which everything could be organized along these lines, all groups based on the free consent of their members, and therefore that all top-down military styles of organization like armies or bureaucracies or large corporations based on chains of command would no longer be necessary. Perhaps you don't believe that would be possible. Perhaps you do. But every time you reach an agreement by consensus rather than threats, every time you make a voluntary arrangement with another person, come to an understanding, or reach a compromise by taking due consideration of the other person's particular situation or needs, you are being an anarchist, even if you don't realize it. Anarchism is just the way people act when they are free to do as they choose, and when they deal with others who are equally free, and therefore aware of the responsibility to others that entails. This leads to another crucial point, that while people can be reasonable and considerate when they are dealing with equals, human nature is such that they cannot be trusted to do so when given power over others. Give someone such power, they will almost invariably abuse it in some way or another. Do you believe that most politicians are selfish, egotistical swine who don't really care about the public interest? Do you think that we live in an economic system which is stupid and unfair? If you answered yes, then you subscribe to the anarchist critique of today's society, at least in its broadest outlines. Anarchists believe that power corrupts, and those who spend their entire lives seeking power are the very last people who should have it. Anarchists believe that our present economic system is more likely to reward people for selfish and unscrupulous behavior than for being decent, caring human beings. Most people feel that way. The only difference is that most people don't think there's anything that can be done about it. Or anyway, and this is what the faithful servants of the powerful are always most likely to insist, anything that won't end up making things even worse. But what if that weren't true? And is there really any reason to believe this? When you can actually test them, most of the usual predictions about what would happen without states or capitalism turn out to be entirely untrue. For thousands of years, people lived without governments. In many parts of the world, people live outside of the control of governments today. They do not kill each other. Mostly, they just get on about their lives the same as anyone else would. Of course, in a complex, urban, technological society, all this would be more complicated. But technology can also make all of these problems a lot easier to solve. In fact, we've not even begun to think about what our lives could be like if technology were really marshaled to fit human needs. How many hours would we really need to work in order to maintain a functional society? That is, if we got rid of all the useless or destructive occupations like telemarketers, lawyers, prison guards, financial analysts, public relations experts, bureaucrats, and politicians, and turn our best scientific minds away from working on space weaponry or stock market systems to mechanizing away dangerous or annoying tasks like coal mining or cleaning the bathroom, and distribute the remaining work among everyone equally. 5 hours a day? Four? Three? Two? Nobody knows because no one is even asking this kind of question. Anarchists think these are the very questions we should be asking. Do you really believe those things you tell your children or that your parents told you? It doesn't matter who started it. Two wrongs don't make a right. Clean up your own mess. Do unto others. Don't be mean to people just because they're different. Perhaps we should decide whether we're lying to our children when we tell them about right and wrong, or whether we're willing to take our own injunctions seriously. Because if you take these moral principles to their logical conclusions, you arrive at anarchism. Take the principle that two wrongs don't make a right. If you really took it seriously, that alone would knock away almost the entire basis for war and the criminal justice system. The same goes for sharing. We're always telling children that they have to learn to share, to be considerate of each other's needs, to help each other. Then we go off into the real world where we assume that everyone is naturally selfish and competitive. But an anarchist would point out, in fact, what we say to our children is right. Pretty much every great worthwhile achievement in human history, every discovery or accomplishment that's improved our lives has been based on cooperation and mutual aid. Even now, most of us spend more of our money on our friends and families than on ourselves. While likely is not, there will always be competitive people in the world, there's no reason why society has to be based on encouraging such behavior, let alone making people compete over the basic necessities of life. That only serves the interests of people in power, who want us to live in fear of one another. That's why anarchists call for a society based not only on free association, but mutual aid. The fact that most children grow up believing in anarchist morality and then gradually have to realize that the adult world doesn't really work that way. That's why so many become rebellious or alienated, even suicidal as adolescents, and finally, resigned and bitter as adults. Their only solace, often, being the ability to raise children of their own and pretend to them that the world is fair. But what if we really could start to build a world which really was at least founded on principles of justice? Wouldn't that be the greatest gift to one's children one could possibly give? Do you believe that human beings are fundamentally corrupt and evil, or that certain sorts of people, women, people of color, ordinary folk who are not rich or highly educated, are inferior specimens destined to be ruled by their betters? If you answered yes, then, well, it looks like you aren't an anarchist after all. But if you answered no, then chances are you already subscribe to 90% of anarchist principles, and, likely as not, are living your life largely in accord with them. Every time you treat another human being with consideration and respect, you are being an anarchist. Every time you work out your differences with others by coming to reasonable compromise, listening to what everyone has to say rather than letting one person decide for everyone else, you are being an anarchist. Every time you have the opportunity to force someone to do something, but decide to appeal to their sense of reason or justice instead, you are being an anarchist. The same goes for every time you share something with a friend, or decide who is going to do the dishes or do anything at all with an eye to fairness. Now, you might object that all this is well and good as a way for small groups of people to get on with each other, but managing a city or a country is an entirely different matter. And of course, there is something to this. Even if you decentralize society and put as much power as possible in the hands of small communities, there will still be plenty of things that need to be coordinated, from running railroads to deciding on directions for medical research. But just because something is complicated does not mean there is no way to do it democratically. It would just be complicated. In fact, anarchists have all sorts of different ideas and visions about how a complex society might manage itself. To explain them, though, would go far beyond the scope of a little introductory text like this. Suffice it to say, first of all, that a lot of people have spent a lot of time coming up with models for how a really democratic, healthy society might work. But second, and just as importantly, no anarchist claims to have a perfect blueprint. The last thing we want is to impose prefab models on society anyway. The truth is, we probably can't even imagine half the problems that will come up when we try to create a democratic society. Still, we're confident that human ingenuity being what it is, such problems can always be solved, so long as it is in the spirit of our basic principles, which are, in the final analysis, simply the principles of fundamental human decency. Okay, great. I really like that essay because David Graeber does a fantastic job of pinpointing how we all teach our children anarchist principles as they grow up without really even realizing it. Those instincts to fairness, human decency, cooperation, and mutual aid are all very natural human tendencies. Those natural human sensibilities have been under direct and coordinated attack by think tanks like the Virginia School, which was founded by a terrifying monster person, James Buchanan, with the explicitly stated goal of weakening and eventually demolishing all vestiges of democracy across the globe. And that sounds like ridiculous hyperbole. But recently, the historian Nancy McLean from Duke University published her findings in a book called Democracy in Chains. So the book represents years of research about this Virginia school and its affiliates. The Virginia school was started by James Buchanan, and he really is the worst kind of human being. Billionaires like the Koch brothers poured hundreds of millions of dollars into educational and government programs with the express purpose of dismantling democracy through the decimation of support and public services, slashing all taxes on the wealthiest, and eventually privatizing everything. Other financial backers of Buchanan and his Virginia school are Shell Oil, ExxonMobil, Ford Motors, IBM, Chase Manhattan Bank, General Motors, and many, many more. And all of those huge corporations and their billionaire owners have a very vested interest in not only maintaining the status quo. That's never been their primary focus. They want to radicalize their base of fellow owners and billionaires and change the world as we know it. To quote from Buchanan's own writings toward public policy, he saw it necessary to dismantle Social Security, Medicaid, Medicare, as well as kill public education because it tends to foster community values. Feminism has to go too. It's a socialist project. If you think all these ideas are hooey, you know, and that nobody would ever elect to actually mobilize towards them, you know, or fund them egregiously, I've got really bad news for you. By 1990, many years ago, two out of every five sitting judges across America had personally attended Buchanan's Virginia School of Public Policy. Fully 40% of the U.S. federal judiciary had been treated to a Koch-funded curriculum. Society as we know it has been undergoing a hostile takeover by the 0.01% wealthiest elite. And that sounds like a conspiracy theory, I know that. But the evidence has been laid bare for all to see. So it's really time to stop the gears of this machine dead in its tracks. We have no time left. And if I can't succeed in radicalizing you, then I fear that I haven't done my job. So why am I specifically talking about anarchism when I'm trying to radicalize people towards solving the immeasurable issue of global climate collapse? If you've listened to the show, then you know my general thesis is doing the same thing and expecting different results is never actually going to work. There are a number of organizations now, some very brand new, are gaining great momentum towards trying to fix the very real and dangerous issues of climate change. One, for example, is Earth Strike. It's a somewhat new organization that is gaining momentum very, very quickly. They've got a lot of really great information on their climate briefing. Their general mission is a series of strikes, a series of general strikes. Their first was on January 15th. Their second, let's find out. I know it's on here somewhere. Here we go. It doesn't say when their second is, but the final culminating strike is scheduled to take place on September 27th of 2019. I will certainly be taking part in that strike, and I will be doing everything I can to try and get more people to join me. We're going to talk more about Earth Strike in depth in probably a later episode. More information is available at www.earth, anarchist-strike.com. They're just one of a few organizations that are mobilizing to try and solve this problem. Now, listeners of this show will know that I talk about a phenomenon called one-step syndrome, where I think an organization or a group of people or a single person has their heart in the really right place, but are unwilling to take that final step towards either realizing the root cause of the real issue and addressing it, or just doing what is truly necessary to no longer try and fix small symptoms of a problem, but actually address the true disease. I talked about anarchism in the very beginning of this episode in an attempt to radicalize you towards the far left, because I think the rootest of all the root causes of the global industrialization that is killing the world and will threaten the lives of billions of people and animals in the very near future is this society that has been constructed without our consent. It is this society that we have been strong-armed into, never actually saying that we were okay with it, never actually volunteering to be part of this society. I really like David Graeber's essay because he submits to our absolute fundamental human decency, which I very much believe in. I'm a great believer in humanity. I've always considered myself a humanist. I think people can achieve great things, and I don't look at my fellow human beings and think, well, you're too stupid to have control over your life. You know, I don't look at my fellow human beings and think, oh, what a dullard. I look at everybody and I see a group of people just trying to survive in an unnecessarily competitive, vicious, cruel system. I've talked endlessly about the threat of structural violence that hangs over your head every single day. And it's so difficult to see because it's so ubiquitous. You know, it's a forest for the trees kind of situation. And so as much as I think that Earth Strike and other similar organizations' mission is exactly the kind of thing that we all need to be mobilizing towards, I disagree that appealing to government is going to fix the problem. I disagree that appealing to corporations is going to fix the problem. I disagree that, you know, a carbon tax is going to solve the problem. I disagree that, you know, showing up to the voting booth every, you know, 2 or 4 years is going to do anything. And you'll know that because I harp on it all the time, very annoyingly. I think unequivocally, if human beings were free to try and solve these problems together without having to appeal to completely unjustified authority, then we could actually solve these problems together. I feel very strongly that we could. And I think that a strike is a great idea. I think a huge general strike is absolutely necessary, because so long as we're all still willing to invest our labor into this system that is directly killing the world and enslaving all of humanity, it just shows our willingness to capitulate. Striking against that system en masse has the potential to really show that we stand in solidarity against these dangerous structures that endanger all of our lives. Now, to take that last crucial final step, I think it is absolutely critical that we dismantle the structures of power that are perverting the best of our human nature towards competition and domination. Because right now, this system is rewarding the people who want to hold power over other people. It's rewarding those who wish to dominate. it's not rewarding everyday people who just want to help one another and survive, you know, and maintain some level of, you know, basic human decency. So how do we work towards that? I called it anarchism, and David Graeber called it anarchism. It's really not essential that you call it that if you dislike that term. Words are just words. There are other organizations that have come up with really viable solutions to the ills of the society that we all struggle in right now. The Zeitgeist movement, even though, you know, some of the videos and material that the founder, Peter Joseph, made initially as a young man were kind of weird, if I'm being honest, and definitely a little conspiracy theory-ish. The movement as a whole has really kind of solidified itself as a scientific methodology through which to address the issues of, you know, slavery and structural violence. The Venus Project is another great example. Even though its founder, you know, had issues, Jacques Fresco and Roxanne Meadows did decades of work on figuring out how to solve so many of the issues facing the world. Again, that would go immediately towards ending slavery and ending structural violence and approaching all issues from a direction of real human need, which is all I want. I stated a few episodes ago, I just want us to approach problems from the position of real human need towards maximizing possibilities and allowing us to formulate our own questions and work with one another to organize a more equitable regenerative society. Because that's the other thing. We can no longer use the outdated term sustainability. We can no longer, sadly, you know, invest our time in permaculture and think that will do the job. We need to absolutely start focusing on regenerating what we have destroyed. And let me clarify, you and I didn't destroy the world. We just tried to survive. 70 companies, the number used to be 100. It's since shrunk down to 70. 70 companies across the world are responsible for basically all of the dangerous climate change that we are experiencing. And those 70 companies are so vested in maintaining their power and wealth that they will do anything to ensure the world continues as it is. I think I've talked about a lot of the contradictions of capitalism, but one of the primary contradictions is it has no long-term sustainable system. It will inevitably benefit from very short-term, short-sighted goals, and it has no end game for the kind of the damage that it's done. Okay, so I've talked enough. We're going to continue trying to radicalize all of you, whom I love so very much, in the following episodes. We'll talk more about Earthstrike, the IWW's Environmental Caucus, and other organizations that are trying to mobilize towards saving the planet. And hopefully I can convince some of you that, you know, continuing to play within the rules of this terrible game are not actually going to solve any of the real problems that face us all. As always, past episodes can be found at creamcitymedia.com/anti. I look forward to having some great discussions with some of you in person over the next few weeks.